Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Hey guys, Kurt Geyer here. Welcome to another episode of Working Class on Deercast. I don't normally do this on these episodes, but this episode was recorded at the ATA show in Louisville, Kentucky, at the beginning of January. So when we do these mobile shows, the background settings and the mic quality and all that is never in a super controlled situation like it is here at the studio. So when things go sideways here at the studio, it's just our fault and we're learning as we go. We're rednecks that are trying to learn this whole techie stuff. And at ATA, there's a lot of stuff outside of what we control that goes on. So just a heads up, there is a little bit of background noise. The mics aren't as crisp and clean as they are here in the studio, but I think the conversation is a ton of fun with the Lindsays. They're great guys, and we appreciate all your guys' support with this new series. We're having a blast with it. We're learning a ton, and as we go and move forward and get more comfortable with this new series on Deercast, we're going to get better and better, and we're going to be sifting through those comments on Deercast specifically for topic ideas, guest ideas. If there's someone from Deercast you want to hear on the podcast, let us know. Any topic suggestions, anything at all, throw at us. We don't know unless we get the communication from you guys that are listening, or if you'd like to hear us just cover a certain topic with whoever, throw it at us. This is our community here on Deercast. It's our people on this platform specifically. It's the hunter's safe space, if you will. So we're doing our best to embrace it with all that we have. So I'll quit rambling. Hope you guys enjoy this episode, and thanks for the support.
ATA show 2022. I think it's day two. Feels like day eight already.
Yeah, it's been a long one already.
We got the Lindsays back on the podcast in the booth. What's up, fellas?
What's up, man?
Hey, it's been a while since we got to hook up and do a podcast, because, I mean, a couple years, right? Seems like now.
Yeah, I'd say it's 2 years.
Which is crazy to think that much time has gone by, but
yeah, you guys come a long way in 2 years.
We're working hard, man. I appreciate that. You jumped on early with us. Remember we chatted about lining up with the first podcast several years ago when we were in our first studio in Girard? And you weren't in person. You would have been – it was a closet is what our studio was there. Right. So now it actually might be worth coming to check out if you guys are in the area. But no, I appreciate you guys came on early, so you gave us a chance, and it's kind of cool. Now we're in with the Drury family a little bit, and we were talking this morning, like, which dream – was it Dream Season Working Man?
Yeah, well, Dream Season Celebrity was the first one.
That was the first one.
And we did. Well, then what was the next one called? It was just Dream Season?
Yeah, just Dream Season.
Sylvia was on your guys' team, right?
Yeah, that's how we got to be buddies with Tim. And I think he's from your guys' area somewhere.
I mean, I've hunted with Tim on his farm in Iowa. And he's real close, half hour roughly from where we're at.
I mean, we made lifelong friends at that show, and, you know, Drew gave us the platform to, mm-hmm. to where we are today, no doubt about it. But Dream Season was a lot of fun. It was a different type deal because you're hunting and it's competition. You know, it's probably doing it for all the wrong reasons, but we were very competitive guys.
Yeah.
And that drove us, and that drove that whole team. We was on a team full of killers. I mean, we killed every year. It was 25, 30 bucks that those three or four teams killed, and it was fun. It was good old days, you know.
Did that seem like a lot when you guys first started doing that with, like, cameras in your face and, like, having – or have you guys always done that or used to it?
Yeah, we've kind of done that before. We filmed a jury for a few years before that, and then Dream Season was kind of the last 4 or 5 years, I guess. But, yeah, it was
– yeah.
It's something we were kind of used to at that point.
Yeah, yeah, so it wasn't like any shock. I feel like – if we got thrown, I mean, like you said, you were with them and all that, so it wasn't like this big thing, but it'd be hard to, like, get used to being on camera all the time. And, like, podcast simple for us, but you get in front of a video camera, I feel like it's easy to be, like, get robotic real fast.
Yeah,
you know?
Everybody changes. You turn that camera on, I don't care who they are, man. You know, I'm, like, filming my wife, and I'm like, who is this person? You know? I was like, I've never heard you talk like that.
Relax.
Yeah, just be yourself, you know?
Dude, so you guys have had a killer season. You know, we follow you guys, of course, but we were creeping this morning just to get caught up on everything. And I'm like, I don't even know how to ask you guys about a specific deer because it's like big buck after big buck after big buck. Like, how many big bucks you guys shot this year?
Well, we counted it up yesterday. One guy, I've got to ask the same question. I think between us and our family, we killed 15 bucks this year and then 4 bulls.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, I say family, like, brother-in-law, my son's killed 3, Kyle killed one.
He was busy. He's killing some slammers.
He is, man. How old is he? He's 7.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's so 7. Cool. He killed one in Iowa and killed 2 bucks in Georgia. And we had – see, he didn't fill all his tags because I did actually buy him a bow tag in Missouri. Took him hunting there twice with a crossbow, and he didn't see nothing. And he never wants to hunt Missouri again. Most times we see zero deer. So.
No deer there.
Yeah.
How does that feel, Grandpa, to see that?
Oh, well, that's not counting all the does he killed.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's killed 10 deer so far this year.
His little back's hurting. Carrying the load.
Is it cool to see your grandson kill deer?
Oh, yeah, man, that's awesome. Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
I can't imagine like that. Like, I think about my son when he gets older doing that. I can't imagine if he has kids watching them hunt and do like what we love.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be kind of just like a... I don't know. I have no idea how to wrap my head.
And as a dad, I can't imagine any cooler feeling than to see your dad and your son sharing that. It's pretty cool.
It is. It's cool. It's a cool feeling. And
something out in the hall.
Cleaning the floor or something.
Yeah, it sounds loud through these. It's not.
Yeah, I hear that.
Anyway, but yeah, I think that's just so cool, man. Pulling that up. When he pulled up, he's like, "Look at this thing." I'm like, "It's such a stud deer."
Yeah.
Does he like? He obviously knows what big deer are and stuff like that, but.
He does. You know, I've been told by a lot of people, you know, everybody's got their own opinion when you start. He killed his first turkey when he was 4, you know, and they're like, well, a lot of people, maybe that was too early, but, I mean, he wanted to kill one when he was 2. I was like, no, we gotta
hold
off. He was shooting the gun. He was practicing. He was dead on. I knew what he could do, so when the time came, I mean, he executed. And even though he's my son, he kills first deer when he's 5, but he's never been really sitting in my lap. I'm not cocking the gun, putting it on the deer. We don't have a phone scope or nothing like that. He's got the gun, the shotgun, or the rifle on death grip. He's loading it. He's pulling the hammer back, and he's doing it all. So
he really is.
So once he can, awesome. David took a couple times and he shot does, and I was like, well, I didn't have to do anything. I was like, I know, just hand him the gun and get out of the way.
He's got it.
You know, one thing he asked me when we was fixing to get out of the stand, he goes, Papa, I said, yeah, is that gun unloaded? I said, yes, sir.
That's pretty cool.
7-year-old.
That's pretty dang cool, man. Well, taught him good then because he knows that stuff. You have to, right? What's kind of like at school with like, you know, like teachers obviously got to know like what he's doing and like his friends and stuff.
They're cool with it. Yeah, he goes to a private school, which is probably maybe a little more accepted. It's in the country.
Right.
So it's probably a little more accepted. But yeah, you know, I gave him a picture to take the second one he killed. And both his deer he killed in Georgia, he had named because we'd had previous encounters. And the first one he killed was, I think it was older than he was, you know, it was like a 7 or 8 year old buck. And, but yeah, he does know. You said, does he know what a big buck? He does. Everybody's always said, oh, no, you know, 120, 160, they don't know the difference. And I do believe that some. But Cash, I mean, he's been around it so much. Yeah. He'll, like, pick up a big set of sheds and the springtime, he's like, well, this is the one I want to kill. I'm like, well, there goes that theory.
You know, he, yeah, that's what he knows five. Exactly.
Right. He's calling out, this is a 160 type buck. Like,
but on. The deer he killed in Iowa late season was perfect. It was a 5 or 6 year old deer. He was one that was easy to high grade because he didn't have a whole lot of mass, but he was wide and short tine, no brows. You know, mid-30s deer, but he had 11 points, so he likes the points. Yeah. He was wide, so, you know, yeah, he could. If he would have killed a 160 on that one, I honestly don't think you would have really known the difference.
Yeah.
They don't understand maybe mass. And,
Yeah.
That one's got short brows. He doesn't care.
Yeah, short fours. I'm going to let this one go. Yeah.
He's got 11 points. That's a big deer.
Yeah. That's all. So, I'm sure you shoulder mount all these deer that he's killing. Are they in his room, or are they with Dad and Papa's deer?
Yeah, he's the one in Illinois shot his crossbow last year. That was his biggest one. That one had like 12 points. It was 141. And I FaceTimed him when I was at the taxidermist in Illinois. So he's pumped about that. His two in Georgia were just going to – I said, well, if we – you know, they weren't giants or nothing. I said, well, if we just skull mount these, you can have these in your room in 2 weeks. And so I think they're about done. And now the one he just shot here, we sent to our taxidermist. So he wants to hang them all in his room. That's his goal.
That is cool. That's got to be fun.
Yeah.
Are you guys big taxidermy guys in general? I mean, you guys shoot so many deer and elk and whatever else. Like, are you real big on taxidermy? Because I know some guys are, or they get out of it because they get too much.
Yeah. I'm a stickler on good taxidermy. I feel like, you know, I've had several taxidermists over the years, and now we got a guy out of Missouri, Rick Lowry, who I think is the best in the world, and very big stickler on that. My one regret is... you know, you got so many mounts, and even Dave said that, you know, over the years, I mean, how many is too many? I wish I probably would have euroed a lot more, not necessarily one for space, but two, you know, the capes fade and it's like, what do I do? Do I remount this deer or bugs got in this one? So I was like, if I would just euroed every deer I ever killed, it'd look cool, but I don't know, something about a deer mount, the redneck in me's got to prop him up.
Seeing that original cape just kind of brings you back to the hunt and you can see exactly what that deer looks like on the wall.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So your guys' collection, I mean, was together at one point. Because, when I lived with my dad, it's like my bucks were with his bucks. So it looked insane because we had a bunch, you know, not as much as what some people have. But then, obviously, bought a house, moved out, and have our mounts were, like, separate, you know.
Right.
Now we have our studio that we're kind of compiling everything in there because the houses are getting full. But, I mean, was it that bad? Like, do you guys have, like, a game room set up? Or is it just kind of, like, in the living room? You know what I mean? That type of thing.
Yeah.
Mine's set up in my family room. I mean, I got a real high ceiling, and I got all my mounts up high, and I got a bunch of pedestal mounts. But it's kind of like, when's enough enough? But then you go kill that deer you've been hunting for 2 years, and you're like, I'm not going to just, you know, hero him. I'm going to mount him just because he's beautiful.
Yeah,
he's got a perfect cape. So, I mean, it's never ending.
It's hard not to. I just like that question because I love taxidermy. I think it's cool to, like, see people's setups and why they chose what form and – just, I don't know, I just think that's part of the fun of it all, and that's what you enjoy forever after you get them.
Bring them,
you
know, back to life, And we split ours up. I was, because he had so many, I was like, look, take these down, put yours up.
Right.
And so I'm in the process of building me a trophy room, and I got, you know, in my mind's eye, what I want it to look like, it's going to be awesome. But
like a Tom Miranda style trophy room, have you seen his? It's like a room like this that we're
but
in, just like full from floor to ceiling.
Yeah, I don't quite have that, but I got a bunch. I don't know how many we were figuring up the other day, how many we had, and it's a lot, but it's just where do you put them all? So trophy room.
Give me a number on shoulder mounts. What do you think you have?
What do you got, Dave? You ever counted them?
Probably 40.
40?
You got way more than that.
You think?
I got 80-something.
80?
I'd have to pull my picture out and look at it. I just threw out a number.
Yeah. He's probably got 100. But that's why this last few years. Yeah. And I'm not saying there's not a number. It's like, if he's 150, I got to mount him or a euro. It's just like what that deer means a little more to me or something like that. Or sometimes you get those darker skulls or more mass. I'm like, you know, that would look cool on a euro mount. Yep. But when I build my trophy room, and you guys may have an opinion on this, but my plan is I don't want – so many deer just get lost in all these trophy rooms. And down in Texas, these guys were complaining about it because they had the greatest collection of mounted deer I've probably ever seen in my life. But they get up so high, you lose that.
You're looking at the bottom of main beams.
Yeah. And so he just a 200-inch deer, he just doesn't look that big. But when they're down on the level, so that's my goal, is kind of stair-step them, have them one about head height, one about chest height. And that's going to take your room up, and that's going to kind of limit what you can do. But to just be able to see and almost touch them, it just, to me, that just means a lot more.
I agree with that.
And we even talked about this because this year we at our studio we had – both your big bucks, my buck, Doug's buck, Eric's buck, all these other deer that we killed, you know, and they're skull plated or skull mounted as they're going to the taxidermist. But in the meantime, we bring them back to the studio to play with them. And it's almost like, how fun would it be to just kind of have them all skull plated? Because you can pick them up,
yeah,
and like
touch them, like a shed.
I think a shed, yep. You appreciate it a little more. Yeah. And that's just kind of fun to like hand them off and like, I don't know. So it's cool, but then I think you'd regret not shoulder mounting some of them big deer. But I think just to handle them, the appreciation's a little different than just looking at it on the wall.
Yeah.
But
just need the money to be able to replica every one of them so you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, there you go. That would be cheap.
Yeah, really.
That's probably why Dave, I mean, honestly, all of his big ones lately, he pedestal mounts them. And that way you're setting them on the floor, he's hanging them low, and he can turn them with some of the cool technology now. But they're right there. Every one of his big deer now is like, I can grab it.
And pedestal mounts are classy.
Yeah.
They just got a real good,
yeah,
like,
they are.
Like a prestige.
It's art. Yep.
It's art. Yeah.
Yep.
You can get it and you can walk around it. The back of the mount's finished. It's, I don't know. There's something about them.
Yep.
We got a couple now and they take up a little more room, you know, but it's like for wall pedestals. We're not doing them all floor pedestals.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kill some real big bucks. Then I'll, you know, like a 180 bigger type deer than I'd probably do. More floor pedestals. Here, my voice is going away.
Yeah, our voices are kind of rough this morning.
Yelling at each other.
I shot a couple deer last year with the traditional archery and did like it's a big floor pedestal and had them kind of interacting together. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, because you both killed them that way, yeah.
Killed them both with a longbow, yeah.
Nice. So how are you going to do the mountain lion?
I think I got a full mount, you know.
Yeah, he's so big, yeah.
So, I don't know. I was like, man, should I rug it? I was talking to the guys out there because they said it was a good cat, you know, not like insane. But it'd probably be the only one I ever kill. Because it's just one of them hunts. Like, I don't really need to shoot 5 mountain lions or anything like that. You
right,
know?
Yeah. Once you've done one, it's like a bear.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's exactly. So I was like, man, I got a full mountain, I think. So I'm going to do it on, like, snowy rocks or snowy branches. And I shot a buck in Illinois that I'm going to Euro mount. And I think I'm going to put the Euro, like, in the rocks.
Like a dead kill or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that'd be bad.
Yeah, so just kind of bring my season together in one mount like that. So
the buck you killed this year is the one you're going to put in the...
Yeah, the second one I shot, I'm going to Euro that one and put it in the rocks. Like, and I think it'd be cool to, like, set it in so it kind of sits down in the rocks. So it's been laying there like an old lion kill or something like that. But we're going to put it in the studio so it's looking down in our, like, entertainment area. So I think it'd be kind of neat.
Yeah,
but that's going to be big, take up a lot of space, but we're going to get it up high so it's like looking down. But I don't know, I just, taxidermy is cool, but I think about this often. If my daughter and my son don't get into hunting, which if they're not, that's fine, and I kick the bucket, what the hell are they going to do with all of them? I'm going to have to like write it.
Yard sale.
Donate them to a Cracker Barrel somewhere.
That's going to be those ones, that somebody found at a garage sale or something. I've never thought about that, but that is frightening.
It is. I mean, because it's so much.
Yeah, you can't put them in like just.
It'd be like
anywhere.
Can you imagine my daughter being like, "Dad's got 40
deer heads,
100 taxidermied animals." If she's not into it, she's probably just give them away. Yeah. My buddy Jim Burns is like that.
Yeah,
he's like, his kids don't care, and he's got moose care. I mean, all everything, you know, a bunch. He's like, I'm like, will them to me. I'll do something with them. Just give them to a local Cracker Barrel. Or end up, that's how those big legendary bucks end up in like a tavern somewhere. Yeah. And then some guy really recognizes how big of a deer it is years later. I think those days are gone now. But
right. We need to start a museum, a local place, or everybody with this problem has a place to bring their heads. They know they're going to be in a safe place.
Like a goodwill for taxidermy. Move them through. Yeah, probably not a very marketable business, but
no.
Maybe.
Well, it sounds like that's what your studio is going to be for, though, right? Just make it a museum.
But it's going to get full quick.
Yeah,
you know,
everybody's
with all our stuff, you know, because we get together there and everyone comes. So you want to be like, hey, there's the buck I shot. So, but Ross replica, he shot a 200 last year, got it replica, shoulder mounted, wall pedestal. And then he's full mounting the original because he's got the man cave for it. So he's bringing the replica to the studio. I'm getting my dad's biggest one replica just as like an insurance policy. So, and then we're doing a skull plate version of it so we can take it to trade shows and let people handle that buck and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of space and a lot of room, but it'll be all right. But earlier, before we started going, we were talking about, like, I just thought this conversation was interesting. I just want to tap into it a little bit with you guys. Like deer resilience, like for survival, right now, because right now we're into the late season, and you guys, I walked in to your guys' conversation. I'm assuming you're talking about like Texas bucks.
Yeah.
Where after the rut, they don't really have to go through the brutal weather conditions like Midwestern and Northern type deer do. So, and you brought up, do we see a lot of our deer make it, our older deer make it to the following year? So, do you notice a huge difference in like deer quality from Southern deer to like Midwestern deer?
I wouldn't say quality as much as, you know, just carryover. You know, in Georgia,
maybe quality is a bad term for that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, but carryover, I don't know. In the Midwest, it feels like, you know, you're five and a half and bigger or older deer. I mean, I don't know, Dave. And we talk a little bit about this a lot. This time of year, we're always talking about this because they get so beat up in the rut, you know, or your neighbors kill them, or they just flat out disappear, or some of them die of HD. But, I mean, from year to year, is 50%, is that too high on carryover?
Where?
For five and a half, and talk about Iowa, Georgia. Illinois. And in Georgia, that number is going to go up. Like in Texas, he's like, well, you know, our number is probably close to 100%. You know, it's just that we don't lose them. And they have more mature bucks down there than you could imagine, than you can wrap your head around. And they do
and
fight.
And their fur, you know, so thin this time of year. You know, you can't compare growing deer in Texas and growing deer in the Midwest. I mean, it's
those
just
deer,
not fair.
Yeah, the Texas deer, I mean, they're rutting right now, and then they got – you know, like I was saying, January, February, March to recuperate, and it's 60 degrees. You know, it may get down a little cold, but it's warming up in the day. And our deer in the Midwest, I mean, they just went through the toughest 2 month stretch of the year in the rut. Get their body weights down. They got pus pockets. They got eyes out. Broke ears.
It's crazy.
And you know, hey, it's going to be sub-zero wind chill for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah,
you know,
and you're all your body months. Fat's down, so try that
good,
on.
Good
yeah.
luck.
Yeah.
Never thought about that with Texas deer, how easy they have it after the rut. But
oh, it was
conditions are
for me.
Totally different.
Well, you think 50% carryover in the Midwest?
Man, it's different. It's different every year, you know, because
there's so many factors that play into it.
There is. I mean, we had EHD hit in 09 and 12. And, gosh, I can't even remember. What year was it we lost? I do know because we counted them all up. We had every deer documented, every one that we found. And once it disappeared, it was 70 to 75% of our mature deer that we figured was three and a half or four and a half or older died of EHD. We had found them or they disappeared and never showed back up. But I don't know. What would you say that number is now? I mean,
well, it depends on when you start your number. Are you starting at the beginning of season? If you say at the beginning of the season, I got 10 deer over 6 years old, then you got poachers. We got roads going through our property, they get hit. We found them with just heads cut off, EHD. I mean, fighting. We found several deer last year just from dead from fighting during the rut. You know,
we're going to kill some of them.
Right.
Yeah. Neighbor's going to kill some.
Yep.
And so you throw all that into place.
50% might be generous sometimes.
When you really start thinking about it, you're like, gosh, it couldn't be worse than that. But then when we start thinking about it and really looking at the deer that we kind of had on the hit list and where they're at now.
Yeah.
One of them shed early. Is he going to make it?
And one of our big things is some of our deer just disappear.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know where they go. We don't know if they're going to come back or what happens. So do you count those deer? I mean, you know, because they may show up the next year or something.
You don't really need to count it until they show back up in velvet next year. You know,
there's some creep.
We may think it's 50% now. Velvet, we got 25%.
I started keeping up with them last year. You know, and so I've got it on the tablet, and I just kind of keep up with all the deer that we had. We felt like it was five and a half and older because we really wait. We're not going to shoot one before that.
Yeah.
So we wait till they're five and a half and older before we really document them. We keep up with them before that. But, so I got them on a chart. Yeah, and it's kind of scary.
Really?
Yeah.
It's tough to get a deer that old. I just think that conversation is really interesting. Like, you know, how many times you find a dead buck during shed season, and I don't know, you just think – someone shot him and he was wounded. But like fighting injuries is probably like a pretty high percentage of like buck deaths because it's kind of a bad design. Like the antlers, they're just taking brow tines to the forehead and just crack skulls and whatever else.
It's truly survival of the fittest, and especially when you talk about the Midwest and what they got to go through. And I think that's, you know, overall why the deer in the Midwest, or, you know, the cats meow, what everybody compares to these giant bucks in the entire country, is the Midwest, because they got what they got to go through the winter, and they've just evolved to be these just big bodied, bigger specimens, because that's the only thing that could make it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you bring a Texas deer up here, I mean, it'd die in 2 days in this weather we're getting.
Right.
But yeah, it is crazy, because I've never hunted Texas. I've been in the Texas airport. I've never actually been to Texas, you know, but we're going to go to Texas, I think, in the next couple of years.
That's on the to-do list. It's That'd on the, be a fun
yeah,
one.
Yeah, do some type of hunting, you know, whatever it is. And yeah, I just never thought about that. Like, after the rut, when they ran down, they're kind of just, I don't want to say sitting with their feet up, but they kind of are, in comparison to what these deer are going through. Especially, imagine having your skull full of pus, and then you got to be outside in like 0 degree weather and then find food and avoid coyotes and everything else. It just wouldn't. It's a tough life.
Yeah, from the day that they drop as a fawn, you know, they got something after them.
Yeah,
a turkey's even worse. You know, we won't get into that, but I mean, they got a rough life. I mean, it's the truth of the matter. They're a great animal, the greatest big game animal in North America, but they got a tough road to hoe to get to 7.5. Because at the end of the day, a 7.5-year-old buck, and this is different everywhere. This is different even in Iowa. Some guys I was talking to a couple of days ago who I respect a lot, but we feel like 7.5 to 8.5 is the biggest that buck will ever get, typically, if you just look at all the ones. But there's not that's a small sample size, because to get one to that is has to almost be a miracle.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so one day, you know, this is a couple of years ago, me and Mark Drury, three of us were sitting around talking, and it was like, man, you know what? I think you start counting all the bucks, you got to have 100 bucks to get one to that 7 or 8 age.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, once you start figuring, you know, every little spike and you start counting them all up, okay? And every other one of those 7 or 8 year old bucks is going to be not a junker, but you know, 140-inch 8-pointer or 135-inch 7-pointer. So, honestly, you about have to have 200 bucks, and this is, you know, not like science. This is just what we kind of came up with. We got to have 200 bucks to come up with one buck, like a big chocolate, that made it to 7.5 and was at the biggest he's ever been, and probably was going to go downhill after that, or he may have had one more good year to actually hunt. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what you really want to kill. You want to kill a buck you feel like, man, I took him out on the top, he was never going to be any bigger.
Right. Yeah.
But that's just all the stars have to line up. We won't get into that, but
it's interesting to think about, though. I just love that type of conversation. Well, we talked about this a while back. I can't remember who said it. Maybe you'll remember, but they say, who the hell? And maybe Bill Winky, but I'm probably wrong on that. Saying that bucks want to be like 140 is like, that's like what the potential of a deer wants to be, you know, like genetically anything bigger than that is like a specimen.
Right.
Like on an average, like how humans are, you know, or 5'10", like that's like average height roughly. Anything bigger than, like, your exceptional height a little bit, you know, so like bucks want to be. Does that make sense, what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
I can't remember how he quoted it.
Not every deer is going to be a 170 when they max on. I mean, the average deer, when he maxes on at 6 or 7 years old, is going to be a 50 type deer.
Yeah,
you know, like 40 or 50
going type. That's what made me think of it, kind of what you were saying, because, you know, you get an 8-year-old buck and he's just 135-inch 8. That's sometimes, that's just what it is.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's one of those that either got high graded by the neighbors because they were hunting a bigger one or something like that, and he didn't get shot. But I mean, just to get, you take like the deer Goliath, for instance, the deer that, you know, we get asked about more so than any other deer. And when David had that encounter with him, when he was 7.5 and he was 230, or no, he was 240. No, he was 9.5 then. I'm sorry, he was 9.5. Because at 7.5, he was the biggest. He went down to 210, if you can go down, at 8.5. And then at 9.5, he was the 230s or whatever. But that deer, when he was 6.5, he was 205 or 210. We have those sheds. So anybody in their right mind, you know, if deer walked out on me, and I would have shot the deer,
for
you
sure,
know.
Yeah.
But he didn't move. He was a nocturnal buck, or one of our neighbors knew a little bit about him. He had an encounter with him when he was 7 or 9. I don't remember looking back. And but he'd only been seen like 2 or 3 times ever. So for that deer, obviously, was the Michael Jordan of bucks, because he grew that. But had he been a deer that moved, he would have got whacked at 5 or 6 yeah, or something yeah. like that. So that's kind of next level thinking. But that deer, like, you know, in Iowa, you do your, you put out a mineral block or a pile of feed, big time, whatever, try to get them to come in and get pictures of them. Well, that deer, it wasn't. You couldn't, yeah. he wouldn't come to that. And an old timer up there told us that deer didn't like corn.
That's yeah. right. And never so could get a picture of him on corn.
Really not, crazy. Not one time, us or the neighbor who I knew had a couple of feeders out. And I had a picture of him one time on a scrape. He didn't see the camera. And one other time when he was, I don't remember if he was 7 or 9. This is going back 10 or 12 years. So my memory, I can't even hardly remember what happened yesterday. But he come in, it was Reconyx at the time. We had the 3-burst mode. And the first picture, he was looking at the camera at like 10 yards away, 8, 10 yards, whatever. The next picture was his butt. And then third picture was no deer in there. And that was just on a scrape. And, you know, and those, you know, Reconyx are not like flashing or anything. Yeah, just throwing some infrared lights up. So 2 pictures of that deer ever.
And this other one was he had his head up in the brush bushes.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so he working the scrape. So he didn't see the camera, evidently. And that was the only other picture we got of him.
Man, he's that wiry.
He was that wiry. And thank God he was that. Well, you know, we didn't end up with him, but it's like the big one that got away. We still talk about him more than any we killed. But thank God he was like that. Thank God he was that scared of daylight or humans or whatever, because that's what led him to stay alive, to grow that giant rack.
Wonder what, like, makes an animal that way. Is it just, like, paranoia of survival? They're just like, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, why is he so different? Yeah.
You know, what my thinking on that is, the deer's got to have that kind of genetic. He was 200 4 years. We know 4 years.
That's amazing.
He was over 200. And so with him doing that, I mean, he's got to have that personality to stay hid, to be nocturnal. Mm-hmm. But not only that, he's got to have that genetic.
Yeah.
And now that was back in from 7 to 10 or till 9, and or from 6 to 9 is when we have most of the history and encounter stuff that happened with him. And so since that time, a lot more people are hunting. You know, you're on the map now. Everybody's hunting around you. Everybody's trying to find a pocket somewhere they can squeeze in. And it's kind of harder for the deer to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just
somebody's in every woodlot where normally they could have a little sanction. Yeah.
And everybody's putting in food plots now, and everybody's doing everything. So
smarter,
it's tough.
Hunters, you know.
Yeah.
You're smarter, and you handle things differently. And, I mean, we've learned a lot in 10 years. That I never would think that if deer was alive now, we'd kill him. He'd still be kicking our butt. But
however, we do have one deer that Jeff had like 3 years ago that he was filming, had his eye out, and he filmed him. I think he was 4 or 5 then, and we hadn't seen that deer again until this year. He showed up midday.
No, he did show up last year.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, late season.
But that's the kind of deer right there. He may not have the genetics, but he kind of got the personality.
Got the personality for the survival. Okay, let me ask you this. Then we'll close at the pod. This might be this question will either go over really well, or you guys are going to look at me like, what the hell are you talking about?
No.
I'm going for it, though. If you put yourself in the mind of a deer, do you think you could get past you as a hunter? Does that make sense?
Right, yeah. Yeah, just...
if you think about it, now you got to factor in deer things. The rut, you only get to do that
a couple
weeks of the year, so you got to move.
I'm dead by Halloween. Yeah.
What, you think you could survive through a skilled bone?
I'm not that smart.
I'm dead October 10th.
It'd be hard to stay in that little 30-acre sanctuary for my whole life.
Because you got
to
eat.
Yeah,
you got coyotes.
You can only look at so many trees. You got to move around and check things
David,
out.
David is like the ultimate survivor. Yeah,
I would say he's
the Goliath.
No, you're putting yourself in a position to say, oh, I'm smart or I'm not smart. But this is what I think I found out over the years with a deer. Is that whether it's the rut or if it's the food or the women. Mm-hmm. That's what gets them in trouble.
Yep.
And if you ever watch deer, and what I've kind of learned from them is you can almost watch them and tell before you kill them that they're making a mistake, and that sometimes they'll stop.
They kind of know they shouldn't be doing it.
Just like that, and they think. You don't know what they're thinking, but sometimes I think they're thinking. Their instinct is telling them to do this.
Yep.
And they're ignoring it a little bit.
I'm letting my guard down here. I know better, but I'm doing it anyway.
I just got through with this one doe. I got to go to the next one.
Yep.
That's really interesting. Like,
there they go, and they're and it's almost they'll hesitate if you ever watch them, and they'll stop and look and just hesitate for a little bit, and in their mind they're probably thinking, "Don't do that."
Yep.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. That's my girl.
That's like, yeah, that's my girl. Yeah, I'd be 2.5-year-old buck smoked by like a school bus or something,
walking down the middle of the road,
yes.
Looking for a place to
follow the stripes.
My thinking is like I hear all these stories from people saying, "Man, I hunted this deer for 2 weeks. For 2 weeks, I hunted this deer, and the one morning I sleep in, he's on camera."
Yeah.
You know, I heard a story from a friend this year. He told me that right there. He's hunting this deer real hard. And, I mean, I just try to be, persistent.
Yeah.
No matter what, just try to be if at all possible. And other than that right there, I'm not smart or nothing. I don't have a magic number. Just I happen to be blessed to be in a spot where it's a big deer. And so we just pursue them. And
put in the time. And
hopefully. Sometimes we win. Sometimes we lose.
That's what makes it fun. It wouldn't be as fun if you knew you were just going to win every time. It wouldn't be the same.
No, it's not. You got to give respect for them and appreciate their survivability and to be able to chase them. I think it's full circle. But you know, money, sex, and drugs—that's what's the demise of all humans. So you know, deer—it's
not
like
really much different.
Food and love and survival.
Yeah, you know?
That's what gets them killing.
It's fun to think about. I like that. To kind of getting in the mindset of a deer, I think is just interesting conversation because a little bit of different thinking, you know. So tapping into it. So I appreciate you guys taking the time and coming to BS with us right off the bat. We buttered you up with some Krispy Kreme.
Hey,
we
appreciate it, man.
Good. I am now full.
And sorry to everyone that's probably laughing at my voice this entire podcast, but trade show season's here.
It's rough.
Yelling at each other all night, you lose your voice fast. So you guys want to plug anything or anything like that before we get out of here?
I don't think so, man. You guys keep up the great work. Y'all come a long way. Y'all got our respect.
Sure. Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
And congrats on the full-time gig. And, I mean, that's a big deal, man.
Thank you. Yeah, we're full speed ahead now. Yeah,
that's awesome.
We're going to have some fun.
Us now, right?
Nope. We're going to have some fun. It's time to get serious about this now, huh?
That's right.
All right.
Good.
Everyone, thanks for watching and listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.
Hey guys, another Giant Tracker segment. This one I'm a little more familiar with because we know Kyle. What's up, man?
How's it going?
Good, good. Long time no see. Not really.
Yeah.
So Kyle Leonard from Iowa, thanks for doing this again. He was just in the studio and we did a full length Working Class Bowhunter podcast on another deer cast related giant that you killed, which is, I think, what would we... You measured it, and then we re-measured it right after that podcast, like 192 and some change, right?
190 7/8.
190 7/8. Just a giant. I'll put a link to that episode in this description for DeerCast and YouTube and stuff, and I'll throw some overlays, cover art, and all that here. Absolute stud of a deer, and congratulations on that again.
Thank you.
And so we were going to a trade show, might have been ATA or something like that. And Doug's like, "Well, Kyle killed another stud," and you did. So, I mean, not long after. So talk about that buck a little bit, the second one.
Yeah, I had been ever since I shot my deer with a bow, I was on the fence on shooting him earlier in the year, and I was just, you know, I said, it's gonna be that big deer or bust with a bow. And that was my goal the whole season. And then so this deer was a regular from velvet all the way up until I shot him. I'd get a couple times a week, you know, he'd be by. There was two real good spots, you know, late season that I had. And that was, you know, I was focusing in on that. And it took me all the way till the last weekend of season.
Mm-hmm.
Shot him on the Saturday.
That's a way to close it out, man.
Yeah. And it was the first time I ever took my daughter out with me. So it was.
Well, she was actually with you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was even more special.
So. Oh, that makes it even better. Yeah. Way better. You could have shot any deer. It would have been cool with the fact that it's like a good. How big a deer is it?
We got him at 152 7/8.
Yeah. That makes it even better. That's a stud deer no matter where you hunt.
Yeah. We were. I wish I would have been recording. We were watching some does out in the field, and all of a sudden he just popped up out of nowhere, and she looked at him and said, "Daddy, you need to shoot that deer."
Okay. How old is she?
She's 4.
Oh, that's, dude, that's so cool. So was she like, has she been around big deer like that at all? Or she, what was her reaction when she saw this buck?
She was excited. I mean, yeah, she always sees does, you know, we go drive around that area right outside of town here. There's all kinds of deer and she likes watching them, but yeah, she'd never seen anything, you know, like that.
Yeah.
She'll look through trail cam pictures with me and she'll be like, "Dad, that's a big deer."
Yeah. So. Yeah, you wonder if the youngsters know like how big a deer, you know, I know they don't know that's 150 or that's 170, but you just wonder how they view it. You know what I mean? Because I remember when I was young, everything was a giant buck, no matter what.
Yeah, but we actually had some other ones come out in the field after the fact, and she's like, that one's not as big. So yeah. I mean, I guess he kind of knows, but
yeah. So that's awesome, man. So I didn't realize your daughter was sitting with you when you were hunting.
Yeah.
So tell me what happened. I mean, so what were you using, a muzzleloader or shotgun or?
Muzzleloader. This is actually the first buck I've ever killed with my muzzleloader. So I had a heck of a season. My biggest deer ever with a bow, and then my first ever buck with a muzzleloader. Shot some doe.
With your 4-year-old, that makes it even sweeter, man.
Right.
So you had this buck. How long have you known this deer leading up to this hunt?
Actually, he was on my radar last year. I seen him in that same spot last year, and I videoed him, and I was like, man, he could really do something next year. And he put on a pretty good amount this year. Mm-hmm. I'd say probably I have to remeasure the sheds. I actually got him right here.
Yeah, show him off.
But.
Awesome. Yeah. Same frame and everything. You can definitely tell. Yeah.
And he actually flipped the sides that he had the crab claw on this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of weird, you know, talking about that other deer of mine, he actually flipped sides on some of the characteristics of him. It was kind of odd to see, you know, that both of them deer, you know, flip flop sides, but
I wonder what that is. That's a question for like Mark Drury. I feel like he would know. If I remember, I'll ask him just to see like if there's any genetic characteristic or like a pattern with that he sees. But I mean, it could just be just random. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
What did this buck that you, your second buck that you shot and the big 190 that you shot earlier in the season, did you ever have any pictures of them together?
I was going to go back and look. I think I do.
See, that'd be pretty dang cool. Like you'd have to almost print that out and frame it with the mounts.
Yeah, I'd have to, but I'll have to go back and look. There's another deer that, he was running with, and, the neighbor actually shot him. So
awesome.
Look and see. Well,
I guess I don't know if that's awesome, but maybe, I mean, if your neighbor's a good guy, awesome, but.
It was actually a girl. It was her first time ever going out by herself.
Okay, that's awesome. That's cool.
She works actually at Old Barn. So,
oh, no kidding. It's such a small world, man.
It's crazy.
That whole circle over there. Well, I mean, you're in Iowa. That's where big bucks live. So, I mean, dude, both the stories, you know, you were in the studio and did that full-length podcast with your first buck. And, you know, we put some clips up on our socials of you filmed that deer the year prior. And we showed the clip of it like eating in broad daylight, like beautiful big buck footage. It's incredible. And people were kind of like freaking out and making jokes in the comments like, yeah, I don't care if I'm tagged out. You know, they're kidding around. But, man, it would be hard to sit there and watch a buck like that just come in and mill around and eat turnips or whatever he was on and then just walk off. So I'm glad that buck worked out for you. And this other buck, you know, with your daughter worked out. How did DeerCast play like a pretty good role in the success on both these hunts, or how do you normally apply it?
Yeah, actually, they both days that I shot those bucks on, they said great. And leading up to that, the weekend before, it said great, and I seen really good deer movement. Just I didn't see him. He was the only deer I was going. Well, there was another 8-pointer, but he wasn't near as regular. I didn't have any history with him up until late season, really. So it wasn't, you know, I wasn't really too focused on him. But so I never did see him the weekend before, and then actually it was, I think, 2 days before I ended up shooting him. He was out in my other food plot, with like 30 minutes to go shooting light, and I was at work, and like, man, I was like, I'm taking Thursday off, and I'm, you know, I'm leaving early, and I'm going to go out, because it said great all weekend.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were, like I said, we were sitting there that night, me and my daughter, and I had hunted that plot pretty, you know, pretty hard. And I was like, man, I might've just burned this out, or they might've picked through the food. I hadn't been out there to check the food or anything, you know, as mm-hmm. far as the turnips and, you know, what was going on, just trying to stay away. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, like it was, I was starting to get pictures up on my other plot, and I was like, man, we should have just went up there. The wind wasn't ideal for that though. So I just stayed where I, you know, where he was more regular. He wasn't,
yeah.
Like I said, I got him daylight up there earlier in the week, but he wasn't near as regular up there. Mm-hmm. So we went with my gut, and I said, let's just stick it out. And
smart.
It was, we were getting, like I said, I was getting pictures up in that other plot, and I was like, man, this isn't good.
That's that's the bad side to trail cams. They make you question a lot of moves that I think you would have just made regardless from, you know, MRI or just anything that you already know. But then you get pictures of deer in another spot and you're like, am I in the right spot? And then I'll be honest, trail cams have made me jump out of a spot, and it probably wasn't the best move at time.
Yeah, I've done that too. 100%.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They're a great tool, but if you're not careful, they can get inside your head.
Right.
So it worked out, man. I mean, after the shot, did the buck run out of the field? Did your daughter get to watch him drop right there? How did it all play out?
He actually ran out of the field, and I built my windows to be good for sitting down. You know, it's a mm-hmm. homemade blind, and she was having a hard time seeing, you know, sitting on the chair. So she had to stand up, and she said she watched it, you know, she mm-hmm. stood up on her tippy toes, and then the smoke, she couldn't really see him run off. But
yeah,
I got my head out the window and looked and seen blood coming off of him. So I knew it was a good hit.
Knew it was wrapped up. So what was her reaction when you guys walked up on him?
I didn't take her it was kind of a long night. I had, you know, I clipped his heart. He still ran about 450, 500 yards. It was unreal.
That's insane. Greg was talking about that too. He hit a deer in the heart, and it ran like an insane amount of distance for being hit in the heart.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, when I hit, you know, he sprayed, and then you could tell when he just started walking, it was like you took a water bottle and you dumped red, you know, you dumped blood out with a water bottle walking through. I mean, we had snow, so it was really easy to see.
Yeah. Did you have good blood the whole way, the whole track?
Yeah, I could look up in the snow and see blood 30, 40 yards ahead of me.
No
kidding. He still went that far. I'll have to send you some pictures.
Yeah, do that, man. It's kind of like what nightmares are made of a little bit. I mean, the snow made it easier to track him, but you know, when you make a shot like that and you have that blood and you're walking, you made it to the 200 yard mark, at that point you're like, what the hell happened? Like, what's going on here?
And that's the crazy part. I got to about 300 yards, 250, 300 yards. Just, I don't have a step, you know, I just kind of guessed on measuring it with, you know, different app. But, I got up there and I backtracked it back, and it said I had been about 300 yards, and I came up to three beds. The first bed, it was, you know, the blood like soaked all the way to the ground. The second one was about halfway through, and then the third bed was just real faint blood, and I lost blood completely after that. I don't know if he packed up, you know, mm-hmm. like sat there and it kind of froze up. But
yeah, then
the next day when we went out, we found him, you know, we found blood about 60 yards after that. And it was the same thing after that. It was like you took that water bottle and you started again.
Whoa.
So it'd be interesting to talk to, I know, isn't it? I think it's Greg's cameraman that has that blood dog.
Yep. Yep, Casey.
So it'd be interesting to see, you know, if he, you know, what if he's ever seen something like that, you know, where they've laid down and, you know, I know deer.
But man, in the heart, that's what's crazy to me. Their will to live is insane.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
So when you cleaned him, were you specifically like, you know, I mean, you know, everybody knows like that pocket where the heart's at. Did you pull the heart out and like examined it and everything?
I didn't get anywhere near that. I just started, you know, I just, when I, and then that's when I gutted him the next, it was the next morning. He didn't have any blood left. Like, you know, when you open them up and it's usually bloody, it's like he pumped everything out.
Whoa. That, yeah, man, that is crazy.
I've never seen anything like it.
How cold was it when you shot him, like, or that night?
It was really cold. I can't remember. It was down in the single digits.
Yeah, which is brutal. Like, can you imagine, like, an animal that can take a shot to the heart and then live that long? Do you think he probably died that, I mean, obviously that night?
He died that night. There's no doubt about it.
Man, that is wild. You hear stuff like that and you just wonder, like, a lot of certain, not a lot, every now and again, you hear about a blood trail that you really don't have an explanation on how a deer made it through or what actually happened. And you just, I don't know, it makes you want to just basically do an autopsy and investigate to see what happened. And, you know, but I mean, so many factors can play in: angle, penetration, like how the legs positioned, all that, you know. So each situation is unique, but that's what makes blood trailing fun and frustrating.
Yeah, real frustrating that night.
Dang, man. Well, you got him and your daughter's with you. That makes it even better. So, man, I just want to get you on quick, man, and tell that story. You know, I'll steer people to that other podcast we did. I thought that was a fun one. We actually did it. It's an audio podcast and video podcast. So if you guys want to check that out, that's Working Class Bow Hunter, and it's on our YouTube as well. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your day, man, to come back and chat with me again, and all the support that you throw at us at Working Class Bow Hunter, man. It means a lot.
Thank you. Anytime.
Well, go kill two more giants next year, and then we'll do this all over again.
All right. We'll try.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, listening, watching. We appreciate you. We'll catch you on the next one. Go shoot a giant.
Anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.